And welcome, another Hebrew feedings session and Greek feeding session, I guess. The lesson for today is Exodus 3, 1 to 15. I'm not used to this microphone. Wow. Makes you feel important when you're speaking to a microphone. You have to watch what you say. Exodus 1 to, we'll just go all the way to 1 to 15. And this is the reading for the third Sunday in Lent, which is March 19th. It's the story of Moses' call at the burning bush, very familiar. Now, the lectionary typically hacks these things up. And so the lectionary says Exodus 3, 1 to 8a, and verses 10 to 15. So whenever they do that, that always makes me suspicious, and I want to read verse 8b and verse 9. What don't they want us to read? And I don't know who these lectionary guys are, but they're always hacking away, and they need some exegetes on this group. I mean, let's learn how to read the Bible here. And the first goal is to pick a pericope that starts and ends in the right spots. You know, so anyway, I'm in favor of the lectionary. It's just I wish they would choose units and begin them at the right spot and end them at the right spot. Now, in Exodus 3, then, it ends with verse 15, which is okay, because verse 16 kind of begins a new section of imperatives. Okay, beginning then with 3, verse 1. U'moshe haya ro'eh et zon yithro kothano kohen midyan. And Moses was shepherding the sheep of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. Now, it starts with a non-sequential clause, a disjunctive wow in front of the name Moses here. So it's starting a new section. You don't want to translate the wow and. You want to translate it something like, now it was it was happening, now it was the case that Moses was shepherding. And this phrase, haya ro'eh, see, that's, instead of using a regular perfect, they use haya and a participle, which is interesting. It's trying to stress the continuous action. Moses was continually shepherding the flock of Jethro, that this was his occupation or his customary practice. Tzon in Hebrew refers to sheep and goats, small cattle, and the word for big cattle is bakar. The sheep of Jethro Kothano, his father-in-law, Kohen Midyan. Now, Jethro then apparently was a priest of the religion of Midian. What was the religion of Midian? Well, we know about the Midianites from the book of Judges, right? They came in with their camels and attacked Gideon, remember the battle of Gideon against the Midianites? Midian lived just east of the Gulf of Aqaba, so in southern Transjordan, and here they apparently could also live west of the Gulf of Aqaba, and here we're in the Sinai Peninsula. This is a big debate. Where is Mount Sinai? And we're not certain, really. The traditional site, anyway, is in the Sinai Peninsula in the southern part. But was Jethro a Yahwist, a worshiper of Yahweh? And there seems to be maybe some evidence that he was, which is an interesting question. It doesn't tell us that, it just says he's a priest. Wayinhag eth hatzon achar hamidbar. And he led, namely Moses. So here our sequence begins. And in Hebrew narrative, the sequence is normally presented with these wow consecutive imperfect verbs. Those are the most common verbs in the Hebrew Bible. Wow consecutive imperfects. You can always tell when you have one because it's a wow with an avowal under the wow. Not a simple schwa under the wow, but an avowal. And the preformative is doubled. So these are straight normal preterites. In other words, and he did this, and he did that, and he did that. And that, you follow those wow consecutive imperfects, and you're following the main storyline. Now, they have to break the sequence for various reasons, but that gives you the main storyline. So, and he led the sheep after the wilderness, after the desert. So that's an odd expression. It must mean behind. Yavi, and here's a hifil of bo, another wow consecutive, so it continues the sequence. And he caused to go, in other words, he brought, he caused the sheep to go. He brought, you have to supply the direct object. Oh no, I'm sorry, this is not a hifil. I'm not reading the text here. This is simply a call imperfect of bo. And it's referring to Moses here. And he went, El Har Ha Elohim, to the mountain of God. Now, sometimes Elohim has a definite article, sometimes it doesn't. Is there a difference in meaning? Usually translations do not make a difference. Usually they translated God both times. And I'm not sure if there is a semantic difference or not. It looks to me like it's just a stylistic variation. I don't think, in other words, that you have to say the God. At any rate, you do have that change. Sometimes Elohim has it, sometimes it doesn't. To the mountain of God, Koreva, that's a directive hey on the end of Korev, to Horev. Yayera, Malak Yahweh, Elau. This is a nifal of Ra'ah. You lose the third hey on these wow consecutives. So the angel of Yahweh, remember in Hebrew the word order is verb then subject. The angel of Yahweh was seen. This is a nifal, was seen. Now that's your normal way in Hebrew of saying appeared. So it's more of a middle voice. The angel of Yahweh made himself to be seen. He appeared. Elau to him, Balabat Esh, in the flame of fire, Mitok, from the midst of Ha Seneh, the midst of the bush. So here it says that the angel of Yahweh is the one who appeared to Moses in the fiery bush. Yara, and this is a call. Here the subject is Moses. And he looked, Vahine, and behold, Hasene, the bush, Boer, a participle, was continually burning, Ba'esh, with fire, Vahasene, but the bush, Einenu, it was not, Ukal, devoured. Ukal is a pu'al, perfect, pointed as a pu'al, perfect, And ain means there is not, and the new is the subject. So it was not, and then you'd expect it to be a puol participle, but puol perfect, that's written with a long vowel there because of the pausal form. It was not devoured. So it's the bush is continuing to burn, but it's not consumed. Akal very often goes with fire. Fire, akal, consumes. Verse 3, Wayomer. So here we're continuing our sequence with these while consecutive. Moshe. And Moses said, Asura. One of the characteristics of Hebrew narrative is a lot of dialogue. A lot of dialogue. That's how you portray your characters. That's how you carry the story. That's how you develop plot and so on. This is from Sur. Let me turn. Now, cohortatives in the Old Testament very often simply designate strong resolution. So, I intend to turn. I intend to turn. Va'ereh, and I will look, or I will see, eth ha-mar-eh, the sight, ha-gadol, the great one, ha-zeh, the this one. Now that's your typical Hebrew expression. You got to read it backwards in English. This great sight. Madua, why, lo yivar, ha-sineh, is the bush not? Now here he uses the same verb that he used earlier when he says it was burning. Here obviously it means, why isn't it burned up? Why isn't it actually burning so that it burns up? Verse 4, Wayara Yahweh. And Yahweh saw, which is interesting. First Moses saw, now Yahweh saw. What did Yahweh see? Ki sar lir ot, that he turned to see, that Moses turned to look. Wayikra Elau Elohim, and God called to him, Mitok Hasaneh, from the midst of the bush. Now, what's interesting here is God, Elohim, is the one who is calling to him from the bush, whereas earlier it said the angel of Yahweh was the one who appeared to him. So which is it? Is it the angel of Yahweh or is it Elohim, God? And it's that oscillation that indicates that the angel of Yahweh is not just run-of-the-mill angel, but an extension of Yahweh. A hypostasis of Yahweh. And God called to him from the midst of the bush, Wayomer, Moshe, and he said, Moshe, Moshe, Moses, Moses. Wayomer, and he said, Moses said, Hineni, here am I. Hineni, look me. It's the way of saying, here I am. It reminds you of the call of Samuel, doesn't it? Samuel, Samuel. Or Isaiah, and Isaiah says, Hineni. Verse 5, Wayomer, and he said, Al tikrav. This is how you do a negative imperative in Hebrew. You use al and the second person jussiv. Now the jussiv forms look just like the imperfects, but we know it's a jussiv form because it has an al in front of it. Lo tells you it's an imperfect. So how do you translate this in Hebrew? Don't draw near. You translate it as a negative command. It's called a vetative. Don't draw near. Halom. Here. Shall. Take off. This is from Nashal. First nun. Loses its nun in the imperative. Na'al lekha. Your sandals. Me'al. From upon. Rag lekha. Your feet. Why should you do that? Ki. For. Ha'makom. The place. Asher. Which. Ata. You. O maid. Are standing. Alau. On it. So it's a good example of a resumptive pronoun, the place on which you are standing. Admat Kodesh, who? It is land of holiness. Now this Kodesh is often used as an adjectival genitive. This is kind of a standard construction. So you translate it, it is holy ground. What made it holy ground? Elohim is there. Wherever Elohim is, that's a holy place. Verse 6, and he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And Vayaster Moshe and Moses, this is Ahithophel of Sathar, caused to hide, he hid Panao his face. Ki for Yahweh, he was afraid, mehabit, from looking, El Ha Elohim, at God. Mehabit is Ahithophel of Nabat, a first nun verb, and the nun gets assimilated. Vayomer Yahweh, and Yahweh said, Ra'o, an infinitive absolute, before the verb intensifies it. Indeed, Ra'ithi, I have seen, eth oni, the affliction on me of my people. So I have seen the affliction of my people, Asher b'Mitzrayim, who are in Egypt. And here he switches the word order, puts the direct object first. Va'eth sa'akatham, and their outcry, shamati, I have heard. So I've seen their affliction, I've heard their outcry. Mipane nogasal, from before his, namely the people's, oppressors. Ki for yadati, I know, mako bao, its pains. This is kind of the BC way of saying, I feel your pain. I know its sorrows. Now, yada means more than just intellectual knowledge. It means intimate acquaintance with. So this is really an impressive verse. Here Yahweh, the Creator, is the one who is very compassionate and who feels with their agony, hears their outcry. And what does he do? Verse 8. In other words, he has compassion on his people. Verse 8. Wa'ered, and I will descend. Or I descended. It would probably be better translated as a past tense. And I descended l'hatzilo, to deliver it, miyad Mitzrayim, from the hand of Egypt. So here's a God who first sees their troubles, hears their outcry, and then secondly, he descends to deliver them. Clearly, it's not based in Israel's good works. It's based simply in God's compassion for his people who are suffering. But this idea of God descending, that's very incarnational, right? Who came from heaven. He descends. He comes down to Israel. He doesn't deliver them from a distance, but he delivers them by being down there among them, up close. From the Egyptians, Ula ha'aloto, and to cause it to go up, to bring it up, min ha'aretz ha'hi, now there's a kere kathiv, from, to bring it up from that land, el eretz, to the land, tova, good, urechava, and broad, to a good and broad, to a good and spacious land, el eretz, to a land, zavath chalav udavash, to a land flowing of milk and honey. El Makom, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. It's interesting to just kind of read through the Pentateuch and Joshua, Judges, when they list these countries of the land, and just compare them, because sometimes they give you different lists.
This is the first thing that they've X'd from our reading.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, they don't want us to read about the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, and the Perizzites, because what a politically incorrect thing for Israel to do.
You have to dispossess them.
To dispossess, drive out these natives, and they're afraid this might justify, you know, this imperialism, driving out the Native Americans, and... yeah, it's just, you know, the whole idea of the land of Israel is rooted in the faith of the Old Testament. You can't ignore the land and just kind of spiritualize it. And so we're talking about real nations, and Israel had to drive out the natives of the land in order to occupy their land. And elsewhere, the Bible tells us that God's judgment was on these local peoples because of their wickedness. But the purpose of the driving them out is so that his people can inherit the land that he promised to Abraham. But the land is essential to the faith of the whole Old Testament. That, you know, Israel's relationship to Yahweh is intricately connected with its relationship to the land. When it's on the land and the land is prospering, the relationship is good. When Israel's off the land, you know, relationship is bad. Anyway, this is part of the whole Exodus theme, that God does not just deliver them from, but he takes them to. He takes them somewhere. Doesn't just deliver them from the enemy, but he takes them to the promised land. It's, you know, and typologically, it's the same thing for us. He doesn't just deliver us from, but he's taking us somewhere. Verse 9, and now, behold, Sa'akath B'nai Yisrael, the outcry of the Israelites. B'nai Yisrael is the standard way of saying the Israelites. That's how other peoples were called as well. The B'nai Amon are the Ammonites. So you don't necessarily have to translate it, the sons of Israel, just the Israelites. But it does mean the children, the descendants, who come from the patriarch Israel. So the outcry of the Israelites, Ba'a, has come Elau to me. Vagam Ra'ithi, and also I have seen Ha'lachatz, the oppression which the Egyptians are oppressing them. So here, to make better English, the oppression with which the Egyptians are oppressing them. And now, come, so that I may send you to Pharaoh. Now here's an imperative, verse 10, Laka, plus a simple wow, plus an imperfect, that would be a purpose clause. Come, that I may send you to Pharaoh. Vahotse, that's an imperative. Bring out my people, the Israelites, from Egypt. Vayomer Moshe, and Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should cause to go out, that I should bring out the Israelites from Egypt? And he said, and verse 12 is an important verse because it helps us to understand verse 14. And he said, that, or for, or because, why can you do this? Because Ehye Imak. See, Ehye, I am with you. And this for you is the sign that I have sent you. When you cause to go out the people from Egypt, you will serve God on this mountain. So the sign is kind of after the fact. After you bring them out of Egypt, come here to Sinai, you'll return here to Sinai and serve or worship Yahweh at Sinai. And that'll then be the sign that I have called you and sent you, Moses. Now, what does it mean then, Hayah, to be? And that comes up again in verse 14. Let's get there, verse 13. And Moses said to God, behold, I am coming to the Israelites. So this would probably be a conditional. If I go to the Israelites and I say to them, the God of your father sent me to you, and they say to me, Ma Shemo, what is his name? Notice, they're not asking, who is he? They're asking, Ma, what is his name? Which is a little bit of a different question. They're asking for more than just the vocable Yahweh. What shall I say to them? And here's our big verse, verse 14, by Yomer Elohim, and God said El Moshe to Moses, Ehye Asher Ehye. I will be what I will be. I am what I am. And it goes on, and he said, Ko Tomar, thus, Ko means the following. The following is what you will say to the Israelites. Ehye, Ehye Shalakani has sent me to you. So tell them, I am has sent me to you. And then verse 15 clarifies, and again he said, God said to Moses, thus you will say to the Israelites, Yahweh, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. So notice we have the clause, Ehyeh has sent me to you, Yahweh has sent me to you. So obviously there's a connection between the Ehyeh and the Yahweh, that somehow this is an explanation of his name, YHWH. Now, what does that mean in verse 14? Well, Hayah in Hebrew does not mean simply to exist, but it means to be present, to have your presence felt, to be present and active and felt, not just to exist. So God is saying, you might say, a better translation, I will be present in the way that I will be present. That becomes clear in verse 12 where he says, I am with you. Or for instance, consider the prophets when they say the word of Yahweh, Hayah, was to Jeremiah. So that means it doesn't just mean to exist. God is not saying, I am the existent one. He's not saying, I am the ground of being, you know. He's not saying this. He's saying, I am here. But he's kind of leaving it vague. I'm here in the way that I'm here. In other words, he's not quite telling them how he's going to be present. He's saying, in the way that I will be present. And it will be future history that will indicate how that is. So God is actually going to reveal the meaning of his name with the Exodus event. But we can say that the name Yahweh is incarnational. And that's one of the reasons why Dr. Hummel named his book The Word Becoming Flesh, that even in the Old Testament, Yahweh is on his way to becoming flesh. He's not the distant God, but he's the God who's here with us. Okay, thank you very much.